Welcome to Total Picture Radio, the voice of career leadership. Tune in and dial up your career. Ramit Sethi is the founder and author of I Will Teach You to Be Rich, IWillTeachYouToBeRich.com, a blog on personal finance and entrepreneurship for college students, recent college graduates, and everyone else. His site hosts over 175,000 readers per month and has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, NPR, and ABC News. His book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich, will be published in early 2009. He is the co-founder and vice president of community marketing for PBWiki, a venture-backed online startup that hosts millions of users per month. Ramit graduated from Stanford in 2005 with undergraduate and graduate degrees in technology, psychology, and sociology. On October 30th, Ramit announced the Save $1,000 in 30 Days Challenge, writing, quote, "You'll notice that I haven't written a lot about frugality on this site. That's because Americans suck at frugality. We spend more than we make. We are terrible at deferring our immediate wants and investing for the long term. We go into debt and we blame everyone but ourselves. Remember, fundamentally, there are two ways to have more money. You can earn more money or cut costs. If you've been reading this site for a long time, you'll notice that I'd much rather focus on increasing your earning potential, whether through investments or entrepreneurship. I hate talking about frugality because for most people in America, frugality means hopeless." Ramit, thank you very much for joining us on Total Picture Radio.
It's my pleasure.
How many people are taking part in the $1,000 challenge that you posted on your blog?
Well, it's hard to know the exact number, but I think it'd be safe to say that tens of thousands of people are participating. I've gotten about 5,000 people to subscribe to the optional newsletter itself.
Uh-huh.
And then there are people who are reading it through RSS and participating on it through other blogs. And in fact, I was at the grocery store just the other day, and a friend of a friend came up to me and said that he was taking the challenge and had been taking it for a while. So it's impossible to know exactly how many people are doing it, but it's certainly in the high thousands.
That's great. You know, when I contacted you about recording this interview, and a hat tip to my friend Penelope Trunk, you suggested asking your readers what they would like to know, and they came up with some really great questions. So I'm just going to go based on what your readers want to know. So number one, and this is from Marilini Kamith, and excuse me if I completely slotted your name, from New York City. What is the demographic of your blog readership, and what demographic in terms of income is your challenge aimed at?
That's a great question. I actually started the challenge to serve people like me and my friends, who make a little bit above average income and probably have some money sitting around in a savings account that they don't quite know what to do with. And that was my original intent, because people like me, there's a lot of fat that we spend on that we can cut. What happened was the challenge really spread like wildfire, and the demographic quickly shifted. If you look at the comments on my site and certainly on other blogs, the comments really refer to it not just being for a niche audience anymore. It's really people all across America at different levels of income. And in fact, one of the biggest criticisms is that, you know, there's no way that people can save $1,000. And I think that really reflects that it's not just people who are making a particular income. There are all different kinds of people who are now taking the challenge.
Aaron Thorne in St. Louis, Missouri asks, what is the most useless thing people try to do to save money, i.e., they think they will save money, but they instead lose money? Investing doesn't count.
Okay, so I actually love this question. I think there are a ton of things people do that are useless in terms of saving money. So let me try to go through three of them. I think the first thing, and the most provocative for a lot of people to hear, is that buying a house when you're not ready is the biggest waste of money you can do. So a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to buy a house because I'm throwing away money on rent. And in some areas of the country, that is correct. But in a lot of areas of the country, it's actually financially doesn't make sense to buy a house strictly financially. Because you may think, oh, I have a $1,000 rent. If I get a $1,000 mortgage, at least I'm earning equity. Not quite, because your actual total costs are going to be 40 to 50% higher on your mortgage. That's because you have to include things like taxes, maintenance, insurance that you don't pay when you're renting. So a lot of people buy a house when they're not ready and they haven't fleshed out exactly how much it's going to cost, and they end up losing a lot of money that they could otherwise be saving. I think the second thing is, I find these people on my blog, sometimes they drive me nuts. They're rate chasers. They are the ones who say, I don't know why you use ING Direct. This other bank has 0.5% or 1% more. And I look at them and I say, have you run the numbers? Even if you have $10,000 in your savings account, an extra 1% is about $8 a month. It just makes no sense to go rate chase. Instead, you know, pick a bank that you love, stick with it, and spend that time doing something else. You know, hang out with your family, go watch a movie, whatever, but don't rate chase for $8 a month. And I think the third thing is, a lot of my friends do this. They will deprive themselves of something, and they'll feel good about it because they're being frugal. But then they'll blow their money on something totally stupid. So, for example, some friends, they won't order Coke when they go out to eat at a restaurant, which is perfectly fine. But then they feel very good about themselves. Oh, I'm frugal. I had tap water. And then they'll go and they'll buy an iPhone and sell it the next year to get the new iPhone, which loses them hundreds of dollars. So you can wipe out all of your year's frugality with one bad purchase. And I think that's one way that people, you know, kind of think they're being frugal, but really are not.
The splurge mentality, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I've been saving all this money, so now I can go buy myself the latest, newest, coolest gadget out there.
That's exactly right.
Mike Kohler in Oklahoma City writes, once you've saved $1,000, what should you do with it? Straight into savings, into CD, cash under my pillow?
It depends on your goals. If this is the first time that you've started saving money and you know, times are tough and money is tight around the house, then it would make great sense to just keep that money in a savings account. So in case things get more expensive, you can have that money as a fallback plan. If you're a little bit more aggressive and you have more income coming in and you are in growth mode, you want to know what to do to grow your money, particularly if you're young. The classic strategy is if you need your money for any time starting now up to 5 years, just keep it in a savings account. If you don't need it for 5 years, then invest it. Investments that young people want to look at are simple things like target date retirement funds. You basically pick one investment, you tell them how old you are, and they will do the rest for you. They're low-cost funds, and they rebalance and reallocate for you as time goes on, so you don't have to think about what investments to pick.
One of my favorite questions comes from Chris Reinhardt in West Des Moines, Iowa, and he writes, why do you care if others get rich?
It's an excellent one.
It is.
I think, and the name of the site is I Will Teach You to Be Rich, so it's a natural question.
Right.
If you've read the site, you know that it's a tongue-in-cheek name. It sounds like a big fat scam, but it's not, because as I talk about on my site all the time, rich is not just about money. Being rich is different for each person, but for some people, being rich means they can afford to travel a lot. For others, it means they can afford to buy a Mercedes. And for others, it means that they can just afford to work at a place that they love versus a place that they need an income from. So being rich is about different things to different people. And for me, the goal as to why I started this site was that I wanted people to be able to do what they wanted to do, not be guided by constraints. Just think to yourself and imagine what kind of innovation could we unleash if people could do what they were meant to do rather than what they have to do.
How do you respond to the level of criticism you have received in regards to participants saving money? Many are claiming to save significantly less than you have forecasted. While individual results may vary, do you feel your savings predictions were accurate? This comes from Alex First in Columbus, Ohio.
This question really gets me riled up because I was not expecting the level of criticism that I got in the first few days of the challenge. And just to set the context for what happened, the challenge is called the Save $1,000 in 30 Days Challenge.
Right.
And you save, I define save as using the CEO model. You can cut your costs, you can earn more, or you can optimize your existing spending, like, for example, negotiating your car insurance rates. Well, you wouldn't believe the hundreds and thousands of comments, actually, on my blog and other blogs. The complaints were, number one, I can't save $1,000. Maybe I don't even make that much. Number two, only Stanford grads or Ivy League people can do this. Or number three, you're just trying to make money off ads, which is totally absurd. If you want to make money, you don't wake up at 6 a.m. for 30 days in a row and write tips in the morning and comment on it. It's just, there's better ways to do it. So, I mean, these questions and these criticisms drive me nuts because the point of the challenge is not to save $1,000. Yes, if you can do that, that's great. The point is to to set a goal and save it. Now, if you save $100, wasn't it worth it, right? And the fact is, as I write in the intro of my blog post, Americans are horrible at frugality. So you've got someone giving you tips. You can take my tips or you can get them from elsewhere. It doesn't really matter to me. My goal is to get people starting to think about frugality and seeing that, number one, you can save money by cutting costs on things you didn't know about. And number two, you can actually earn more than you're currently doing. But it's not going to be spoon-fed to you. If you think that there are going to be tips that are given to your exact situation, you know, chances are that's not going to happen. But I think if you're surrounding yourself with people and commenters on a blog or many blogs that are trying to save money and they're supportive of each other, that's a good place to be. And I'll just finalize this thing with one last thing. The criticism has dramatically died off over the last few days. I think what I found is that a lot of complainers came around and said, oh, I can't save this money, kind of threw their hands up, learned helplessness style. But those commenters have gone away after a few days because it just gets old complaining. And now, if you look after day 6, day 7, day 10, virtually all of the comments are supportive. So I would definitely take a look at that. It's pretty interesting psychology of how it works.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And in reading on your blog, it to your point, I mean, just getting people to start thinking about the money they are spending. You've been publishing, you know, personal diaries of, you know, every penny some of these people are spending, the $3.50 for coffee at Starbucks and, you know, going out and buying that $7 pack of cigarettes and just getting people to understand and to think about where they're spending their money and how they're spending their money, I think is that's valuable in itself.
Thank you. Yeah, that is something that it's difficult to think about it. And you can think about money as a very similar corollary to exercising, right? Mm-hmm. We know we should work out more. We know we should save more. We don't do it, although we kind of lie to ourselves and other people about how often we do it. You know, if I asked you, how many times you go to the gym last week? Chances are you might say something like, oh, you know, I probably go about 3-4 times a week, when in reality, you know, most people go less than 5 times a month. So we feel guilty. We know we should do more, but it's just difficult to get started. And there's a lot of similarities between the two, but just starting to think about even the smallest step you can take to save money, earn money, or work out, those are often the most effective ways to get to, you know, achieve your goals.
Here's the last of the questions. If you consider the number of people taking this challenge, the average amount they would have saved so far, and add that all together, how much money has been saved total since you started this challenge? I've saved $360, if that helps. And this is from Troy Costlow in Chicago.
My guess is over $100,000, and this is about the middle of the month. So I intend by the end for it to be I don't want to make any predictions because that's not really the purpose of the challenge, but I think it will be certainly over $100,000. I'm going to do a little survey now that this question has been brought up. I love the question. I'm going to do a little survey and see how much people have saved because I think it's significant. And I think, I mean, for example, this person saved $300. I have a number of people who saved $500 on the first day or the second day. So I think the numbers are starting to climb up there.
I think this is terrific that you've started doing this. What a great idea.
Thank you very much.
A couple of the websites that I learned about on your blog, one is called Bill Shrink, and another one is called Stick. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah. So Bill Shrink is a pretty cool site. You basically can go there, and you enter your cell phone number and your account password. It will go into your account, it will get the information and analyze it for you, and it will tell you exactly how many minutes you're actually using per month. It will tell you how many text messages you're actually sending per month. It will show you charts. And then, best of all, it will show you better plans for what you're currently using. So you're probably overspending for your cell phone plan, and I know I am. And so it showed me better plans in which I could cut my rates. You can also do the same thing for your credit card. I think Bill Shrink saves people an average of about $1,000 every time they switch credit cards. So that's a great and pretty simple way of seeing what you're actually using and then downgrading to the plan or credit card you actually need. Stick is another good site which uses psychology to help you achieve change. Basically, you can publicly commit and bet that you're going to achieve some goal. And I actually used this technique last year. I did a weight gain challenge. I tried to gain weight, and I bet my friends that I could do it. And I bet about 5 or 6 people. It was a couple $100. And every week, I would basically log on to a PB Wiki, and I would write my current weight, and I would write, you know, some trash talk to people to make them intimidated by me.
Uh-huh.
And they got very intimidated, yeah. And and then by the end of the, I think it was 2 months or 3 months, you know, I had won. And I think the public commitment was really important. It actually wasn't as much about the money. It was the fact that I didn't want to lose in front of my friends. So you can imagine, if you're trying to save money, you want to try to get two or three people on board with you. Maybe you make it competitive. Hey, let's bet to see who can save the most money. Or you may just want to make it sort of a comparative way. You say, I think that I'm going to do this. I want you guys to bet me that I cannot. And that really can end up motivating you a lot. And Stick is a good example of a site that does that.
Well, you brought up PBWiki, which is your day job. You're the co-founder and VP of marketing. Tell us a little bit about this venture.
At PBWiki, I'm the co-founder and VP of community marketing. And PBWiki is a collaboration company. So we let companies, individuals, and educators create wikis to collaborate and share information. And the way it works is, let's assume you're a business. You want to share information on a project. The way you probably do it right now is you send emails back and forth. And that can get pretty confusing, especially when you have multiple files and multiple people. You can manage a project, you just put it all in one place on your own private wiki and share information. You can imagine if you're a teacher, you can do this with your classroom. And if you're just a regular person like you or me, you can use a wiki to, for example, if you have a roommate, you can share your bills right there on the wiki, or you can make bets with your friends, or a lot of people use it to plan their bachelor party. So there's a lot of uses for PBWiki.
One last question for you, and that is, you want to get rich, you want to get famous, you want to get paid to give speeches, get a book deal. How did you get your book deal?
I think it started back when I originally started thinking about personal finance, and that was actually right after high school. I had gotten the first scholarship that I needed for college and took that money, which was written to me, I don't know why, and I invested it in the stock market, and I lost half my money. So that taught me I needed to learn about money. And over time, I read, you know, most of the books, and I read a lot of magazines and watched the TV shows, learned about personal finance, and I ended up teaching it to my friends in college at Stanford. At least I tried to, but people just never came. So it was very frustrating. And finally, I started a blog. And I started the blog, and for 6 months, nobody really read it. You can still go back and look at my first 6 months of posts. There's hardly any comments. But I kept at it, and I, you know, would spend a few hours a week spreading the word to other bloggers, journalists. And after about 6 months, it started to pick up, and it grew and grew. And after about a year or two, you know, I didn't try to monetize it at all. I just wanted to get people into a community talking about personal finance and entrepreneurship. And that happened. I was really fortunate that a lot of community members joined. And so book offers started coming in, or at least inquiries. And at that point, I decided that it might be a good idea to start looking into it. So I got in touch with my agent and wrote a book proposal and kind of let her do her job, which she did a great job of selling the proposal. Now I've got a book coming out in early 2009, and it's going to be I Will Teach You to Be Rich, but it will be all new content in terms of personal finance, psychology, and a little bit of entrepreneurship as well.
Well, thank you very much for taking time to speak with us today, and I will look forward to staying in touch with you.
Thanks very much. My pleasure.
We've been speaking with Ramit Sethi, who is the founder and author of I Will Teach You to Be Rich. Be sure to visit Ramit's feature page in the Success Strategies channel of Total Picture Radio. That's totalpicture.com for resource links and show notes. This is Peter Clayton reporting. Thanks for tuning in to Total Picture Radio, the voice of career leadership.